All right, welcome back, everybody, to the Fantasy Hockey Hacks podcast, a member of the Hockey Podcast Network and the official podcast of Left Wing Lock. Joining us tonight, Bruce Gunther and John Enns. As always, boys, how you doing?
Good.
And joining us for consecutive weeks, our special guest, Mike McLaughlin from Left Wing Lock. Mike, how you doing?
Yeah, it's good to be back again. I feel like I'm becoming friends with you guys. I know you better and better each week.
Yeah, it's awesome. We're glad you could be here, and just make the show a little bit better. We really appreciate you jumping on for consecutive weeks and talking hockey with us. It's good. I think we're all starting to build some rapport here enough to the point where John can rip people's hair when he feels like it.
Love it. I actually like the hair.
I do too. I thought, hey, it looks good. I actually said, Mike, you've got more volume than all three of us combined.
Doesn't take much to have more than mine.
Well, and of course, if Tyler were on this week, we could rip him about his hair too, but he's not, so. Oh boy. So we got a good show lined up this week. We finally have some hockey to talk about. Last week was great, Mike. Thanks again for doing the framework for evaluating players. I think that was good. It was well received by the listeners. Our 40th episode, we're on episode 41 here tonight. We can do our NHL Week 13 waiver wire picks and our preview. And of course, we're excited, Mike, to introduce your new segment, Fact or Fiction, which I'm really excited about. John, Bruce, I don't know if you guys have seen any of the notes yet, but I think it's going to be a really good segment. And without further ado, let's move on to John's list, because everybody looks forward to this every week on this show. Anyway, we like to hear what John has to say next.
Nobody looks forward to this.
Oh, we absolutely 1,000% do. Take it away, John.
The player on John's list for this week is Pavel Datsyuk. Main reason is that stupid little shootout movie he has, where he just comes in, does his little move and flicks it past the goalie. Absolutely hate it. I don't know why. I just think it's like one of the ugliest things in hockey. But
that was like the Michigan back then.
Yeah, I don't care.
Yeah.
And then once again, of course, because he was on that 2000s Red Wings team, and I just didn't like anybody there, so.
Yeah, that's fair. I wasn't a fan of that team either back then, just because they were so good for a while.
Yep. But no.
Still not bad for an 8th-round pick, though.
I don't care.
I mean, and he didn't even hit 1,000 points in his career.
Right?
Just
yeah, trash. Trash.
Amateur.
Even though my favorite player of all time didn't either, but, that's a whole...
It's a whole Ryan other story. Smith?
Oh, my goodness.
Ryan Smith.
Ryan Smith. Guy probably didn't even hit 800.
I'd have to look it up. I don't know. Tyler could tell you if you're here. Okay. Well, I mean, I don't have an argument for that one, John, other than...
What?
I mean, he's pretty good. Oh, he's pretty good.
I was hoping for a little bit of pushback on that one, but...
He was pretty good. He was perennially in the Selke conversation. He didn't put up 1,000 points. He put up 918, I think it was, when I looked there quickly. I don't know. I'm not a big Datsyuk supporter, so I'm not going to fight you on it too hard, Mike. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that, but
not a whole lot. He was not on the Red Wings in 1997 when they crushed my dreams and hopes of an Eric Lindros Stanley Cup. So I can't quite give him any garbage for that, right? But I typed him into Google real quick when I saw he was on John's list. I was like, let's see what we can find out about this guy that I don't already know. And all I could find out was that he has really weird eyeballs.
I wasn't gonna say it, but yeah, he looks kind of funny, but
that's actually a fair comment,
because I'm pretty sure that's my reason for hating like every player. It's either the guy's got too much facial hair, or his hair is too long, or he just looks funny. So
he fits the bill, so there you go. Okay. Well, John, thank you for that. It's always good. I think it it sets a good tone for the show every week when we get started with John's list, so I appreciate it. On a different note here, Fantasy Lock of the Week, December 27th to January 2nd, presented by Left Wing Lock. We've got Jack Hughes, center left wing eligible, 73% rostered. A bit surprising me, actually. He's not owned in more leagues, but...
That kid is fire.
He had three goals. Yeah, he's just been lights out this week. 3 goals, 5 assists, 1 game-winning goal, 2 power play points, 14 shots on goal, plus 5, and an average of 19-16 time on ice. It seemed like every time I looked at my phone, it was like Hughes had 3 points or something, right? And it was just like, what is happening right now? But he picked up, not immediately where he left off right after his injury, but he's right back at it. So good news for the Devils. Unfortunately, they lost Hamilton tonight. Not sure for how long. He took a puck to the face. So hopefully no broken bones or anything like that's going to keep him out long term. But keep an eye on it. And then honorable mentions here go to Jordan Kyrou, who had a 4-point game at the Winter Classic. He was the first player to do that in any Winter Classic. And then Jonathan Huberdeau, which Mike will talk about later in the show here, but he had a 5-point game against Tampa on December 30th in that 9-3 win, and he does have 28 points in his last 18 games played. So he's been impressive, but I think that fits really well with Mike's segment, so I'm looking forward to getting to that. So there it is, Fantasy Locks of the Week. And then with that, we'll move on to Headlines with the Hacks. News and injury updates for the week of December 27th to January 2nd. As I mentioned last week and previously, guys, Left Wing Lock does have a complete up-to-date list available on their website for all players placed on COVID protocol. I'm not going to review that list in depth or anything like that. We're not going to go through it in the news and injury updates because it's changing daily.
Way too long.
Yeah, it's a disaster.
I'm not even going to try. If you want to, the link is in the show notes on our website, fantasyhockeyhacks.com, or go to Left Wing Lock directly, and you'll find it there, I believe, under News and Tools. Tools and Stats. Is that correct? Or no, where did I go? News. It's just under news tab.
Yeah. Yeah. There have been so many protocol updates on that list that we were getting complaints from people on Twitter to stop posting whether or not players were in or out of the protocol. I didn't even push back. I was just like, you know what? I think this makes sense. So we just post a link to the list a couple times a day, just with some general updates about how many players have come out or been put in.
Yeah. I noticed that too. You guys started doing that. It was like, there's 130 some players on COVID protocol, and then it went down to 88. And yeah, that's because it's a long list. So we won't waste everybody's time going through that list on the podcast here, but that information is available to you. Excuse me, like I said, on leftwinglock.com. So with that, on the 27th of December, Brandon Tanev suffered a season-ending ACL injury against the Oilers prior to the Christmas break.
That's a big loss for them.
Yeah, it was.
Big loss for them.
He's kind of been the straw that stirs the drink, right? He's just kind of an agitator, and he's actually been more offensive than was expected. So that's tough for them, but such is life. The Panthers, they got Alexander Barkov back. They said they expected him to play on Wednesday against the Rangers, and he was back this week. More games are postponed. Early in the week, Chicago at Winnipeg, Dallas at Colorado, and Colorado at Dallas. Feels like Colorado hasn't played much lately, hey?
Not at all.
Landeskog, he's on track. He's back in action. Had a lower body injury he's returned from. Jason Zucker is week to week with a nagging lower body injury. And Tuukka Rask is nearing a return. So it could be sometime in the next few weeks. I've been hearing mid-January, late January. He's been practicing with the team regularly. Looks like he could return at any point in time, right?
Yeah, mid-January looks really good. I think Boston goes on a road trip around January 8th, I think. And during that time, their AHL affiliate, Providence, has a few home games. So it wouldn't shock me to hear that Rask signs a deal, plays those home games for Providence. And then when Boston comes back from that road trip, we see Tuukka Rask in the NHL.
Okay. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. It's nice if you can always send a guy on a conditioning stint before you bring him back up, which is...
Looking at you, Mike
Smith. Maybe with the Oilers. But yeah, maybe with the Oilers should have done with Mike Smith. Not that it matters now. He's on the shelf again, but...
Yeah, still waiting for Kenny Holland to sign a sheet of plywood for the next couple of games here to play net.
Yeah, let's take a break from the news and talk some Oilers, because that annoys me, that whole situation.
Just derail the whole thing just because of him.
I'm so mad. I honestly, I mean, Smith, he should have had a conditioning stint, first of all. He didn't look good in those two games he played.
Horrible.
No.
The team as a whole did not look good. I don't know. Like, it's falling off the rails quickly. And Mike, we talked about it in the Pluck charts last week. And the Oilers are not above that white line for a reason.
Yeah.
And all I could think as we're watching those games, you were talking about, you know, teams that win the possession battle more often than not are going to make the playoffs, right? And I looked at one point, the Oilers, they got outshot like 14-2, I think, in the third period.
Oh, boy.
It was ugly. So I think actually, you know, without Koskinen in there against the Islanders, they could have been blown out in that game. And we'd maybe be looking at a coaching change right now, which I don't know. I wasn't really on the Fire Tippett bandwagon, but now I'm wondering if maybe a guy like Paul Maurice should step in there and just a change of voice in the locker room gets those guys going, because sometimes it does. But
nobody wants to be the next head coach of the Edmonton Oilers right now. Nobody does.
Well, I mean,
not even the assistant coaches want it right now.
Yeah. It's tough sledding in Edmonton.
It is one dumpster fire that is not going to go out for a while.
No, it sucks. Anyway, so totally derailed that whole segment. Sorry, guys, but I just it was bothering me all week, so I had to get that off my chest. Braden Point returned from injury, and did he score in his first game back there? John, you would know that.
I think he did score. I know he got a couple points here in the last little bit. Let's take a look. But yeah, no, he was money on his return back here. Nothing today because that team just got slaughtered today.
They did, yeah.
But
they've actually had a few rough games here now.
Yeah.
He had 3 points. He had 2 goals and an assist in his return.
Yeah, and then he scored a goal in the next game, and then an assist game after that. So, yeah, he's back to where he was before, it seems. Yep. Which is A-okay with me.
That's A-okay with most of us, yeah. Peyton Krebs is recalled from the AHL, so keep an eye on him as he joined the Sabres. The Golden Knights' 17th overall pick in 2019 has just 1 assist in 13 games played, but with an expanded role, he may be worth an add in those deep dynasty leagues. Jake Guentzel returned. He was at practice earlier this week, but he's back now. Played today. Mark Stone is placed on IR by the Vegas Golden Knights on Tuesday, and not long after that, Max Pacioretty was sidelined. He had wrist surgery. But it doesn't seem to matter with that team right now. They're still playing well. I mean, those are two huge losses, but
and they now have enough cap space to bring back Eichel.
It seems awfully coincidental, hey Bruce.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, as soon as I saw the fact that Pacioretty was out with an injury and there was no timetable on his return, I'm like, there's the cap space we need to bring back Eichel right there.
Yeah, there you go. Interesting.
I wouldn't be surprised if they pull something like that. I won't be surprised at all.
What?
Yeah.
Why would you do that?
Not a shock.
Because other teams have done it.
Yep.
And it worked out well for them, so why wouldn't you? If you can get into the playoffs with let's say the Pacioretty doesn't play now until the playoffs. Look at what happens every time Pacioretty comes back from injury. He lights the score sheet up. So he's if they can get a playoff spot without playing with Pacioretty and having Eichel in the lineup, I think I would do it if I was a GM.
That team would be a nightmare to face in the playoffs.
Exactly.
I was looking up some numbers yesterday just based on the schedule and who's playing who next week, and I think Vegas had the most wins in the league in December. I think they were 10-1-0 or something in December. And I think they had one of the best goal differentials as well. So Vegas has looked really good of late. And what I found interesting actually is Leonard hasn't been playing much. Like
got Brassois.
Yeah, but Brassois played something like 7 of their last 10 games.
Yeah, it's that makes it even scarier, you know, right? They're using a backup goalie. They don't have Stone. They just lost Pacioretty. Like, and they're still beating everybody.
I'm still pissed the Oilers let him go.
Yeah, they should have held on to Brassois.
Yeah.
But I mean, it was kind of a similar situation to what we're seeing with Skinner. Like he was there, he was good, he was ready, but they just, for whatever reason, let him walk, right?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll move on from that. Connor Bedard scored 4 goals on 2 shots against Austria on last Tuesday. He became the youngest player ever to do so in a World Juniors game.
Did you say 2 and shots?
On, or sorry. So 4 goals, no.
Man, that kid's and, good.
Yeah.
No kidding.
That's misinformation there.
12.
Not 2 shots, no.
12 shots?
On 12 shots. You're supposed to say 12 shots. Yeah, my apologies, guys. That there's a dash. That's supposed to be a 1.
It's like 4 goals on minus 2 shots. I'm like, holy crap.
I'm Ron Burgundy. Yeah, anyway. 12 shots. Yeah, it was a pretty impressive outing from Connor Bedard. Unfortunate news that the World Juniors got canceled.
Boo.
Not really sure what else to say with that one. It sucks. It felt bad for the players, right? A lot of these guys, that's, you know, we talked about it, or TSN talked about it a lot, how a lot of these kids, that's their big stage. If it's kids from Austria or Germany or, you know, wherever, a lot of them don't do much after junior, and that's just really unfortunate to see. And I mean, for the Canadian players, they're, you know, they might get a chance to go 2 or 3 times, some of them. So it's not as devastating, but it still sucks as a fan just to see that tournament canceled, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and Bedard must have been a little bit choked because he came back to the WHL and he put up 4 goals in his first game back, so.
Did just fine.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on from that. Boone Jenner was back on the ice for practice earlier in the week. He did return to game action for the Blue Jackets. Malkin is at practice again this last week, but Mike, Left Wing Lockett, reported he may still be 7 to 10 days away from game action.
Yeah, that's right. And like you said, that's from the 29th of December. Yeah. He's still seeing time in practice. He's been on second line center and seeing like kind of rotating in and out of both power play units in practice. So he's right on the brink, you know?
Yeah. That Pittsburgh team. So speaking of teams that have been winning and doing well, I mean, how good has Pittsburgh been? Like no Malkin, they had no Rust. Gensel was out for a while. You know, Crosby was hurt initially at the start of the season. But they had the best winning percentage. It was an .875 winning percentage in December. They were 7-1-0.
Yeah, you know, somebody could really do an analysis of some of these teams and probably come up to an interesting answer on how teams like, for instance, say Pittsburgh or the Washington Capitals have been, or Vegas, as you just mentioned a few minutes ago, how are they able to continue to win at such a high level with so many talented players missing from the lineup for a long time? Yeah, I mean, is it organizational? Like, do they really have just that much more depth than the other teams in the league? Or do these teams have really, really good coaches and systems so that if player A on line one is missing, you just put a new guy in there and he knows what to do?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the answer. I'm just kind of throwing that out there as, you know, something to think about. Because I'd like to know, because, you know, I'm a Flyers fan and they missed 2 or 3 guys in the lineup and they suck. And I want to know why. Like, what is the big difference there? Do the Flyers just really have horrible depth? Or is their coaching terrible? Is it both? Like, I wonder what the magic formula there is that keeps a team like Pittsburgh just grinding away.
I'd love to know the answer to that question because, like, you sound like an Oilers fan, Mike, because we have the same problem. It's like we miss a couple guys and it just seems to fall apart, right? I mean, we have no depth in our roster and Pittsburgh forever, like for the last decade, it just seems like doesn't matter. They call up the next guy. Like Jake Gensel was a guy who I think it was maybe 5 years ago. He got called up just before the playoffs or maybe even during the playoffs and he came up and he played with Crosby and he just didn't skip a beat, right? He just was a performer for them. And they, like every single year, seem to find a handful of guys like that. So yeah. Is it good scouting? Is it good systems? Is it good coaching? Like what's going on there that is the difference? And whatever it is, those are the team. Well, it's Pittsburgh and Washington. How many years are they deep in the playoffs? You know, it's...
Yeah, probably two of the best teams of the past decade, right?
Yeah, they've got it figured out. So, yeah, it's interesting anyway. And then, you know, of course, Brian Rust comes back from injury and posts a hat trick and 5 points.
just crazy. In case they weren't good enough already.
Yeah. Bruce, I'd like to thank whoever dropped Brian Rust in our Yahoo League, because I now have Rust on my roster and he's been fantastic. So
I don't know who it was because it wasn't me.
Yeah, if you figure it out, make sure you send him a thank you for me. This is funny. Mike Smith was activated from IR on Wednesday and then promptly put back on IR on Saturday. I don't know. He's just a note here. Obviously came back, played 2 games, left. And Keith and Hyman are back. It's good to see. Matt Duchene returned to the Preds lineup on Wednesday, this past Wednesday against the Capitals. David Perron, Jordan Kyrou, and Robert Thomas all returned to the lineup against the Edmonton Oilers and made them look silly.
And then they promptly demolished the Minnesota Wilds during the Winter Classic.
Yeah. Yeah, they did. They're good. That team right now, like, they can put up the points, and Binnington, he's an effective goaltender. So
yep.
Look out for the Blues this year. Elliot Friedman reported that the new guidelines by the CDC and the NHL and NHLPA have agreed to shortening isolation to 5 days with no symptoms or symptoms resolving, while still following and respecting local health authority guidelines. So that's good news. Mike, maybe fewer protocol issues for you to deal with. But
yeah, that's right. And in fact, the number of guys in the protocol has dropped tremendously because of that change.
Yeah, that's
great. I think we were at 145 a week ago, and I believe it's in the 80s now.
Okay. So that's good. Good to see. Yep. Hopefully we can start moving towards putting that behind us at some point. According to Bill Guerin, this is December 30th. Both Jared Spurgeon and Joel Eriksson-Ek were expected to be out a couple weeks. We had talked about Eriksson-Ek last week, Mike. So maybe it's not quite as severe as we thought. Could be a couple weeks, could be a few. But not months anyway.
Yeah, that's good news for Minnesota. He's one of their key players.
Yeah, absolutely. Anthony Duclair scored his 100th career NHL goal. He finished the game against Tampa with 2 goals and 1 assist. He's been good for them this year. I think he's nearing a point per game, although his shooting percentage is high. We'll talk about Duclair a bit more in the waiver wire ads, but good season for him so far. Puljujärvi and Darnell Nurse were both cleared and were in the lineup this past Friday. Patrick Laine returned and Adam Boqvist returned to the Blue Jackets lineup. Laine scored in his return. Looked good. Jaden Schwartz was listed as day-to-day with an upper body injury for the Seattle Kraken. Philip Deneau was removed from COVID protocol. Sean Couturier was placed on IR Thursday night, currently week-to-week with an upper body injury. That's a big loss for your team there, Mike.
Yeah, it was a weird one, too, because he hadn't played any games. You know, like, he got put on IR. This is... The IR assignment was after the holiday break, and the Flyers, I think, hadn't played since the 18th. They were one of those teams that, like, got one of their games canceled in that last week right before Christmas. And so I knew Couturier had been kind of... He had a few nagging things he was dealing with.
Right.
So I guess it was a bit more serious than everybody hoped.
Yeah, they probably just thought, let's shut him down here before Christmas and put him on IR and have him come back later. I mentioned that game earlier. Florida beat Tampa 9-3. That was an odd one for me. I think if you'd asked how that game was going to go, a 9-3 beatdown wasn't really what I had expected. Antti Raanta recorded his first shutout as a member of the Carolina Hurricanes. We won't talk about the next game, Bruce.
Yeah, that's not.
Probably a good idea.
The Vancouver Canucks win streak ended at 7 games, but then they won the next one, I believe. So they're 0-8-1 under Boudreau.
8-0-1?
Man, I wish. I don't know what I said.
8-0-1 is like the Oilers record for, man, like the past 2 weeks.
8-0-1. I even had a coffee before the show. Sorry, guys. Let's move on from that one. The NHL announced that 8 more games will be rescheduled for dates later in the season due to concerns over limited capacity and COVID protocols. So that mostly affects Canadian teams, Canadian cities.
And my fantasy teams.
Well, sure. I mean, it sucks because it's Canadian teams have all been, it's 50% capacity or less. Some of them are 1,000 fans or less.
Yeah.
And so the NHL has kind of said, well, we're not going to make money on this, so we're going to postpone these games until later in the season, essentially.
Yeah. My one team took a huge hit. Yeah. I will lose to Tyler this week because of it. Probably a good thing he's not here, so I don't have to hear it either. I was leading by 50 points when the week started, so.
Oh, brutal. Ovechkin scored on the power play to become the NHL's all-time leader in power play goals, passing Dave Andrechuk. Nugent Hopkins was listed as day-to-day and did not play against the Islanders. Cam Talbot left Saturday's game with a lower body injury. So one guy we should talk about is Kaapo Kähkönen. I've actually got him listed in the waiver wire ads as well. Just I don't know what the status is on Talbot's injury currently, but if it is, you know, more than short term, Kähkönen could be a real, real nice add to your roster.
Definitely.
Sam Bennett had a hearing for his hit to the head on Cedric Paquette on Saturday night. He was suspended 3 games for the hit. What did you guys think? Was that fair? Was it too heavy? Not enough?
I didn't even see the hit.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I haven't seen that replay yet.
Where's Tyler when we need him?
Plus it's Montreal. Who's watching Montreal?
No, not many people. I did see the hit. I don't know. I actually, funny enough, I watched it and went, oh, he's going to get 2 or 3 games. That was my guess. And so what he got? I don't know, like it or not. He hit him in the head.
Yeah,
like,
he
I
did. Mean, it's, yep.
Yeah. So whatever. It is what it is. It was funny because I literally just put him back in my lineup. Like he was sick for a game or two. I was thinking, okay, great, I got Bennett back. He came back. I think he scored 2 goals, and then the next game he's out. He's suspended for 3 games. So whatever. We mentioned Kyrou's 4-point night in the Winter Classic, so that's good stuff there. Trevor Zegras was named the NHL Rookie of the Month for December with 2 goals, 9 assists in 11 games played. And Austin Matthews. Sorry, was that Bruce?
I say, then he promptly entered the COVID protocol.
Of course. Because that's the way it goes every time.
Yes.
Austin Matthews, Max Pacioretty, and Thatcher Demko are the NHL's 3 stars for the month of December. Brian Rust, as we mentioned, and Evan Rodriguez both had hat-tricks in that 8-5 win today over the Sharks. I sat Reimer, thankfully. I wasn't sure if Markstrom was going to start later in the day, and I sat Reimer, and I'm glad I did.
No kidding.
And that worked out okay because Calgary actually won 5-1. So, Mika Zibanejad had a hat trick today as well, and Igor Shesterkin had a shutout as the Rangers beat Tampa 4-0. And then John Cooper said earlier today that Nikita Kucherov could be ready sometime around mid-January. And then the last bit of news here, too, is just the Dougie Hamilton injury from earlier today. Anything else for news and injury, guys? For headlines?
Nothing.
Okay.
Nope.
Excellent. Then we will move on to the ad read here for NHLShop.ca. The Fantasy Hockey Hacks podcast is a proud partner of NHLShop.ca, your best source for all officially licensed NHL apparel and merchandise. Follow the links in our show notes or on our website. That is no longer valid, but you can use NHLFS99 at checkout and see terms and conditions, see in store for details. Full disclosure, Fantasy Hockey Hacks may receive a small commission for your purchase, which helps us to continue providing original content. So with that, guys, let's move on to Fact or Fiction. Mike, looking forward to this one. Take it away.
All right. So this is the first time we're doing this segment called Fact or Fiction. And a real quick note to the listeners, we're going to take 3 cases from the league. It may be a team, a forward, or a defenseman, or a goalie individually. And we're going to kind of look at their current state, their current production, and we're going to make a statement as to whether or not we think that can continue. Okay. And so First up on fact or fiction is the Detroit Red Wings as a team. And there's some, you know, trickle down effect here to the goalies of the Detroit Red Wings. So coming into this weekend, the Red Wings were, they were a playoff wildcard team in the Eastern Conference. And I think that that changed just today because Boston beat them. So they kind of flipped spots there in the East. But coming into the weekend, Red Wings had been wildcard contender for several weeks now. And what we want to know is, can you count on this standings position as an indicator of how the Red Wings will perform for the rest of the season? And so what I'd like to do is jump into this idea about looking at a team's overall goal differential. Now, if you look at goal differential, you know, for a full season, what you find is a pretty nice and easy rule to follow. And that's that teams that have a positive goal differential on the season end up as playoff teams. Teams that have a negative goal differential end up out of the playoffs. Now, that's not a law by any means, and we've had some teams violate that rule over the years. I think going back to 2015 to 2016, and then going through the 2018-2019 season, there were only six teams that violated that rule for goal differential.
So pretty consistent then, Mike.
Yeah, so you're looking at a success rate for that rule of about 94%. Now, right now, the Red Wings have a goal differential of negative 22. And that's really low. It's, I don't know where that ranks in the league off the top of my head, but it's, I mean, if zero goal differential or higher gets you in the playoffs, negative 22 is nowhere near where you need to be. And that's just through 33 games. And right now we know that the Red Wings, they've won about 50% of their games this season. So something doesn't quite add up here, right? You have a team that's winning about 50% of their games, but their goal differential is severely negative. So let's jump in and see what we know about the Red Wings to try to decipher this. First up, are the Red Wings a strong puck possession team? And the answer to that question is no. If you look at the data for that, the Red Wings rank 28th in the league in puck possession. And again, this means that they are consistently outshot by their opponents in every game they play. So then you want to look at whether or not the Red Wings have been kind of lucky, either by scoring at even strength or their goaltending at even strength. And a quick look at the data says that they have not been lucky. Their PDO value is 1,002, which is right at the league average, which is what you would expect from a team that's not having their results impacted by luck. And then so finally, we take a look at the special teams for the Red Wings. And they are bad and getting worse. The Red Wings have a power play that is now ranked 29th in the league. I believe it was ranked 25th just like 2 or 3 weeks ago. And their penalty kill is down there as well. It's ranked 25th in the league. So
that's interesting, Mike. Just given the talent that they have available to them on the power play, they've got some capable players.
Oh, they really do, yeah.
I'm surprised to see that.
Yeah, if you just look at the list of names and you're just like, okay, we've got Bertuzzi, we've got Larkin, we've got Raymond.
Sider.
Sider, you know, rookie Sider. You expect that to be a great power play. And just, it's not for right now. It's, and so that's the setup here for the Red Wings. And again, what we're trying to do here is we're looking at the process versus the results. And the verdict here for the Red Wings is that the process and the results do not match at all. We expect the Red Wings to fall in the standings. And I think that fall is going to be quite dramatic for the rest of the season. And so from a fantasy hockey perspective, if you're someone who owns the Red Wings goalies, whether it's Thomas Greiss or Nedeljkovic, things are looking kind of grim.
Interesting. Does that apply, in your opinion, Mike, to any of the forwards or defensemen? Like, are you sort of advising people maybe try to sell high on a guy like Larkin or on a guy like Raymond?
I don't know if I would take the team level statement quite that far just yet. I would prefer to look at their individual metrics for the team. Sorry, for the skaters.
Yep.
But for the goalies, since the goalies have two categories in most leagues, in most fantasy leagues, that are kind of team dependent, and that's wins and goal against average. Mm-hmm. And so if you're predicting that a team is going to drop in the standings, that's going to trickle down specifically to the goalies. And so that would be my concern here from a fantasy perspective is what's going to happen to these Detroit goalies when their numbers aren't propped up by wins anymore.
Could get ugly. Okay, that's interesting. Yeah, I was just noticing their goal differential as well. I was just going through the schedule and stuff last night. It's ugly. It's not league worst, right? I mean, actually, that whole division, the Atlantic, is quite bad. Detroit, Buffalo, Ottawa, and Montreal's at minus 50 right now. So,
oh, wow.
50. Yeah. It's ugly in Montreal, but I love that. That's great. So I guess fantasy managers beware, especially if you have goaltenders on that team, and from probably a futures perspective, if you're doing any sort of betting or DFS, keep an eye on the goaltending situation there in Detroit.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, all right. Perfect. So next up in this fact or fiction, we have a scenario for a Florida Panthers forward. We're looking at Jonathan Huberdeau. And so clearly he's 100% owned in fantasy hockey leagues. Devin pointed out earlier that he had a great game earlier this week. And for the season, he's been remarkable. He has 41 points in 32 games. And just to put that in perspective, and I had to put this in a calculator three times. One, because I was just waking up from a nap, but two, because it just didn't make sense. Huberto is on pace for 105 points.
Wow.
Nice.
This would be the highest number of his career. And, you know, this isn't a guy who's 23 or 24 and you're kind of expecting him to kind of grow each season. Right. This is a guy who's 28 years old. You would expect this is at the age where guys start to actually fall off a little bit in shooting percentage and shot production and things like that. Right. Roughly speaking, there are always guys like Alex Ovechkin who are going to make you look stupid if you try to make those statements too broadly. So the question here is, you've got Huberto in your lineup. He's on pace for 105 points. Should you be secure in that fact that he's going to be able to produce at that rate for the rest of the season? And I'd like to look at these skaters from kind of a split perspective. I first look at their behavior, the things that they can control. And mainly for me, that's shot production. And so Huberto is he's sitting there at 2.6 shots per game. It's a solid number for him. It's just above his career average. Nothing out of the ordinary there. No red flags. Then I jump into a few metrics that indicate whether or not a player is getting lucky. And so first up is a player's individual shooting percentage. For Huberto, that's it's normal. He's shooting at about 13.5%. His career value is 12.5%. But one of the things we talked about in this summer when I first came on the podcast with you guys was that shooting percentages over the last 3 years have actually been a little bit higher than over the past decade. And so Huberto is fine here with this shooting percentage. His individual points percentage is a little high. It's sitting at 83% versus a career average of 73%. So he's getting a little bit lucky. This means that even strength, he's being rewarded with more points than you would expect.
Yeah.
How does the team behave when he's on the ice? They're scoring on about 11% of their shots. And that number is typically closer to 9% for Huberto when he's on the ice. So again, pushing a little bit in the luck factor there. And then finally, the last thing I like to look at is the secondary assist rate for the player. And this is where things get really interesting. It's at 1.36 secondary assist per 60 minutes. And Huberto's career average is 0.53.
Hmm.
That's a 156% boost over his normal level.
That's significant.
Yeah, saying that in kind of a more better English term is it's 2.5 times larger than what he's accustomed to getting.
Yeah, crazy.
Yeah, this is a really high secondary assist rate. One of the things we talked about in that special podcast episode last week that you guys graciously allowed me to join you for was that usually there's only one player per season who will have a secondary assist rate above the level of 1.00.
Yeah.
And I think last week we said there were probably around 12 of those guys in the league right now, and there should only be one. So unless you think Huberto is going to be that guy and that it's going to be 1.36, you're looking at a drop coming for Huberto. And so the verdict here is I see Jonathan Huberto's point production dropping fairly significantly the rest of the way in the season. I think his point production so far this season has been boosted to the tune of about 10 points. Due to luck, mostly due to those secondary assists, but also a little bit due to the IPP and team shooting percentage.
Right.
What would I expect for Huberto? What's a fair value for him the rest of the way? I'd say he's about a point per game player the rest of the way is what I would expect.
Yeah, which is still fantastic production.
Yeah. Great player. I mean, this is somebody who's going to give you great production on your fantasy team. Just be aware that what he's done so far at about, I think he's about 1.3 points per game so far, that's going to drop. It's probably down to about 1.0.
Okay. We'll keep an eye on that. We should make a record of that. I'd be curious to see how he finishes the season based on the pace he's at right now.
Yeah, absolutely. We should definitely revisit that. I'd be really curious to see what his secondary assist rate looks like in the last 50 games.
Yeah. So we'll keep tabs on that. So again, is this something, are you advising fantasy managers, should they sell high or should they just hold on and just know that he's going to regress a bit moving forward?
Yeah. In this case, you know, just the knowledge itself is useful. If you can use that to your advantage to make a trade, that would be great. It's hard to get value back on guys like this, right? Because you need to find a player who's going to get at least a point per game the rest of the way.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, there are some guys out there like that, but.
Okay. No, I was just curious what your thought perspective was on that. So.
Yeah. I think generally anytime you can trade away a player who's getting fairly lucky and get back a player who's at least as good as that player when you strip away the luck, I think it's a good deal for you. I think you should try it. Okay. But you just need to make sure that whoever that guy is that you're looking to exchange for Huberto, you've got to check his luck factors and make sure that, you know, his point production is based in reality.
Yeah. Okay. That's awesome. Thanks, Mike.
All right. And then our last case here for the fact or fiction for this episode is going to be a guy that a lot of people had an interest in as the season began, and that's the Arizona defenseman, Jacob Chychrun. And so, yeah, this guy's very interesting. First of all, he ranked in the top 10 in points for defensemen last season. And I think he had 41 points in 56 games. And so he was, you know, people were jumping on that guy in drafts. I think his ownership level, I just checked tonight, it was at 51%, which is amazing. Like that's really low for a guy with the production you would expect out of him.
Yeah.
But then you look at his actual production and you realize he's not even a top 100 defenseman in points. He has 7 points in 28 games this season. You know, I should point out, I don't want to forget to say this, that Chychrun is actually injured right now. And he won't be back for another week or two for the Coyotes. Yeah, just to make that clear. So the question here is, fact or fiction, should we expect this level of production from Chychrun the rest of the way? 7 points in 28 games. And so we'll do what we do with Jonathan Huberto. We'll look at his shots first. And for me, this is really, really key for Chychrun. he takes 3.2 shots per game, which is an outrageous level for a defenseman. It's wonderful. In fact, if these are the kinds of guys you dream about drafting in fantasy hockey leagues.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a very key point here, is that Chychrun's behavior, the stuff that he can control, he's doing well at. He plays 20 minutes a night just at even strength alone, but he also gets 2.5 minutes on the power play. Now, his power play production and time has been eaten into a little bit this year because the Coyotes traded for Shane Gostisbehere, who they immediately gave the top power play job to, which made a lot of Chychrun owners angry, right?
Well, it seemed like an odd move, like given how Chychrun had played last year.
Yeah.
Like I understand bringing him in for insurance, but just to automatically give him that job seemed odd.
Yeah. I mean, it was just from day one, they just said, Gostisbehere, you're the guy. Now, Gostisbehere had some decent seasons on the power play in Philadelphia. Sure. It had been a few years since he was good at the power play, but he was good. But still, I agree with you. The fact that he got the job right away was shocking.
Now, sorry to cut you off, Mike. We should mention, though, Gostisbehere has 20 points in 30 games played this season. So he's done well in that role.
That's right. He has. That's right. And for a good bit of this season, those two guys have been on the power play unit together, top unit.
Yeah.
So let's take a look at some luck factors. Let's see what's happening to Chychrun. So first thing that pops up for me is individual shooting percentage is only 2.4%. That's very low, even for a defenseman.
Mm-hmm.
And for Chychrun in particular, his career average is 6.7%. So this is a big drop off. He's only scoring on about a third of the shots we would expect him to. The next two factors would be his IPP and his team even strength shooting percentage. Now here, these are kind of conflicting factors for him. His IPP is high, it's 60%, whereas for Chychrun in previous years, it usually comes in around 40. And then the team is only scoring on 4.4% of their shots instead of 7.6. So you have a high IPP, a low team even strength shooting percentage.
Mm-hmm.
And I did the math on this. If you actually multiply those out, they mostly cancel each other out. It's cost Chychrun about 2 points at even strength is what I found out.
So it's marginal.
Yeah. And so one last thing is the secondary assists, and his secondary assist rate this year is 0.25 secondary assists per 60 minutes. He typically comes in at 0.32. That's about a 20% drop.
Yeah.
So we know, just looking at these numbers here, that Chychrun is getting unlucky. He's not getting the assist at a rate you would expect. But more importantly, he's not getting goals at a rate you would expect. And to me, that's the driving factor in my decision here on Chychrun. And I would say fantasy managers should be optimistic about the rest of his season when he comes back from injury. If you have a guy who's taking over 3 shots per game and he can score on about 5-7% of those shots, which is what Chychrun's historical average is, you're looking at a guy who's going to add about 8 to 11 goals to your fantasy roster for the rest of the season.
Hmm.
And that's significant. If you kind of look at the list of defensemen who can do that, there's really only about 12 of those guys in the league.
Yeah.
So that makes Chychrun a top 15 goal scorer if his shooting percentage just comes back to normal. I don't mean last year normal. Last year was ridiculous. It was like 10%. Sure. I just mean like 5-7%. So for me, I'm still optimistic on Chychrun. I think he's going to be performing at a decent level in goal production the rest of the way. And, you know, with 20 minutes of even strength ice time, he gives you nice production on hits and block shots. I think he's at like 1.3 hits and block shots per game.
And just raking in the shifts. I mean, that's right. So many shifts, Mike.
So many shifts.
I wasn't going to say it.
Tyler's not here to roll for it. So, yeah, I know.
Oh, man.
Okay, so fiction on Chikrin and probably a great buy low candidate for anyone looking for help on D.
Absolutely. And the fact that I see that he's only 51% owned, it seems like he's just somebody you could just steal right now off waivers. Yeah. Put him on IR, let him sit there, and then see what happens.
Okay. Well, so maybe we should have talked about him in our waiver wire ads. I didn't realize he was only 51% owned.
Yeah, I didn't. When I saw that time, I was like, this has got to be wrong. But
I'm not sure how I missed that, but that's interesting. That's great. Okay, so Mike, thanks for that. That segment's awesome. I love it. I guess for our listeners, if they have some, like we said last week, if they have some specific scenarios we'd like to play out, they can submit those to us.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you'll break those down. So, you know, guys, send them in fantasyhockeyhacks@gmail.com or hit us up on social media. We'll get those questions to Mike and we'll run through them. And we're going to do that once a month, I think is what we had talked about, right, Mike?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. So yeah, we're not doing it every week, but please submit your questions and we'll get them back to Mike and we'll go over them. I do really quickly want to go back to shifts just for a second here, because Mike, you sent out that tweet earlier in the week. Was it JT Miller? Is that what we were talking about?
Yeah, JT Miller.
Yeah, somewhat leading the league or something in shifts played per game or whatever the stat was. It was pretty funny. So I felt vindicated. Thanks for that.
Yeah, no problem. I saw that and I immediately thought of you four guys.
Oh, jeez. Knuckleheads, hey. All right. Well, thanks again, Mike. We appreciate it. Great segment. We'll look forward to doing that again in the future here. Let's move on to our ad read here for DraftKings. As a member of the Hockey Podcast Network, the Fantasy Hockey Hacks podcast is a proud partner of DraftKings. The NHL season is well underway, and DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, has an unbelievable offer to celebrate the greatest sport on ice. New customers can bet just $1 on any NHL game and win $100 in free bets if either team scores a goal. It doesn't matter if it's a clapper from the point, a deft deflection, or a highlight reel goal for McDavid. However they light the lamp, you win. If DraftKings Sportsbook is not available in your state or location yet, DraftKings won't leave you empty-handed. Everyone can play for huge cash prizes all season long with DraftKings Daily Fantasy Sports Contest. DraftKings is giving all new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes with their first deposit. Download the DraftKings Sports app now. Use promo code THPN. Bet $1 on any team to score and win $100 in free bets. If they score, you score with promo code THPN. This week at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL and NFL for all you football fans out there. Must be 21 years of age or older. New Jersey, Indianapolis, or Pennsylvania only. New customers only. Minimum $5 deposit and $1 wager required. One per customer. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problems? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. And as I catch my breath, let's move on to our next segment, Ask the Hacks.
I want to ask you a bunch of questions. And I want to have them answered immediately.
I think with the holiday season, we were a little light on questions this week, but we do have a few, so we're going to rip through them. Who do you like more for the rest of the season? Patrick Laine or Sam Bennett? Standard categories league that includes hits and blocked shots. We'll ignore the fact that Sam Bennett is now suspended for 3 games. but let's take a look at it, guys. So this one I haven't looked into, you know, in depth in terms of their metrics. Like, I mean, I think, Mike, we could probably look at it just as you had laid out there in terms of behavior and then luck, right, to kind of analyze who makes more sense season long.
Yeah, I think that's a decent way to analyze these kind of trades. I always get tripped up a little bit when evaluating these kind of category league trades that include things like hits. And I realize that's many, many leagues.
Sure,
And it's because in this specific case of Bennett versus Laine, there is a huge disparity in the hits.
Massive, yeah.
I think, you know, Bennett comes in at 7.3 hits per 60 minutes. And Laine is at, I have him at 1.8.
So it's a big difference.
Yeah, really lopsided value there. And so you just, it really becomes an individual issue. Like, do you have a team that is consistently winning the hits battle each week? And can you take that drop of going from Bennett to Laine?
Yeah.
That's really the core issue there. And I don't really know the answer to that. That would be very individual, you know, it would link to that back to that individual person's team and league. I kind of like what Laine's done. It's he hasn't played that many games, but he's, I think he's at a point per game pace right now.
Yep. 11 points, 4 goals in 11 games.
He's taking almost 3 shots a game, which I realize Bennett is actually taking more than that. Bennett is out shooting him by a little bit. I think it's like 3.25 to 3. It's close.
This one's tough. Like
It really is.
It's a tough call here.
One interesting data point that I saw when I just looked at these two players, though, was that Laine's shooting percentage, specifically on the power play, is 0.
Hmm. Oh. That's interesting.
Yeah, that's really weird, right?
Yeah.
I can hear Bruce. I don't see him, but I hear him reacting. Yeah, but yeah, that was strange. Interesting. So you got Laine at a point per game pace, but zero power play goals because he has a 0 power play shooting percentage. So that leaves a little bit more room for his ceiling, I think, for production.
Yeah.
And again, like Devin was saying just a minute ago too, just it really comes down to how is your team performing in that league? If you can spare the hits, I think you make this deal.
Yeah, I kind of like Laine more for the upside. I like Bennett. Like, I mean, he's a hits monster, and he's out shooting Laine, as you said. He's got about 17 points, I think it was, in 26 games. So he's not at the point per game pace that we saw from him late last season, and nobody expected him to be. Laine, on the other hand, I mean, the upside there is enticing. If he stays healthy here now for the remainder of the season, and just given what you mentioned about his shooting percentage on the power play, like we're going to see more goals from Laine, I think. And he's going to be given every opportunity on the power play and to play with good players at even strength. So I don't know. I kind of reluctantly would say Laine, but what do you guys think?
I would lean towards Laine myself.
Yeah, me too.
It's just that hits that's really tripping me up. But I mean, Mike, what's your take? Are you taking Laine or Sam Bennett here?
Yeah, I'm leaning Laine here, unless there's just some real specific need for hits against my opponents.
Okay.
And then there's also kind of this quiet idea of maybe Laine gets traded at the deadline.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah.
I don't know if that's being rumored or not, but
you never know, though.
He's coming up as a UFA, I believe, right? Or,
well, Bruce, you're a contract guy. You seem to know those questions all the time.
I actually don't know that one. I'd have to look that one up here real quick.
Yeah, maybe Bruce can look into that. I want to say you're correct, though, Mike, that he is coming up to free agency. And I did want to mention too quickly. Well, do you have it there, Bruce?
Yeah, he's an RFA at the end of the season.
Okay, there you go. Oh, geez, I lost my train of thought there. It was about Chychrun, though. Because there's talk about him being traded too, right? A couple weeks ago.
That's right.
There's a lot of chatter about him being moved. So, again, I think he's just a great target, whether it's waiver wires or trade. Like, go after Chychrun hard, because if he does get moved at the deadline, you know, stats aside, he's going to have a far better time playing on a contender than he would for the Coyotes. Okay, well, that's good. Let's move on to the next question here. Tuukka Rask or Carey Price, who is the better goalie to stash? Mike, I'll defer to you here first.
I'm going Rask here just because the Boston upside is way higher than Montreal for me.
Yeah. Nailed it right on the head there. Just talked about Montreal's minus 50 goal differential. The defense decimated. I mean, they claimed Cale Clegg, right, off waivers recently.
Oh, yeah.
And he's been playing like 27 minutes a game for them. It's not good in Montreal. I mean, even if Carey Price stands on his head, they're not going to win a lot of games, I don't think. So,
nope.
Yep. Tuukka Rask for me. Everyone's kind of...
Yeah. Yep.
Rask for me too.
Okay. I'm considering picking up Robert Thomas, but would need to drop Victor Arvidsson or Alex Killorn. Good move. My initial response here would be like Victor Arvidsson just had a 4-point game last night. 2 goals, 2 assists, playing with Deneau and I think it was Trevor Moore. I like Arvidsson, like good shot volume. He's a producer in terms of goals. LA does have a positive goal differential. Like they're going to try to push for a playoff spot here, I think. But so I wouldn't drop Victor Arvidsson if it were me. I like Robert Thomas. I think he's at about a point per game last I looked.
He is a point per game.
Yeah. So I'd maybe look at Killorn as a drop candidate to grab Robert Thomas. But again, it depends on your categories. Killorn's probably going to chip in with a few more hits, a few more PIMs. Now, I'd have to check those numbers to be sure. But for me anyway, I just find Killorn's a bit streaky. And Robert Thomas has been playing really, really well. And Victor Arvidsson is kind of the same. So I'd kind of go with those two guys if it were me, but what do you guys think?
I was actually thinking the exact opposite.
Yep.
Fair enough.
I would keep Killorn as opposed to Arvidsson.
I am not sold on Killorn, personally. But, sorry, Bruce, go ahead.
Yeah, he's a bit of a streaky player, but he's playing on Tampa. So he's going to play in the top six. He doesn't have the injury issues that Arvidsson does. Arvidsson's usually injured a couple, 3 times a season.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of, well, granted, Arvidsson has been injured already this season. He has quite a few fewer points than what Killorn does because Killorn's obviously made the most of his opportunities with all of the Tampa Bay players that are out, right?
Yeah.
But if it was me, I would be dropping Arvidsson if he was picking up Thomas.
Yeah, looking at the numbers, you might be right here, Bruce. But he's shooting 3.6 shots a game. That's crazy. But Killorn, like, he's got 29 points here in 34 games. He's been pretty good for Tampa Bay. I'm going to stick to my guns. I'm going to stick with Arvidsson. But you guys are absolutely valid point. Like, you can keep Killorn and be happy with that. So, yeah. Mike, what's your take on it?
I'm holding Arvidsson here. Just I like that shot volume. He's got over 3.5 shots he takes per game. And that's always been kind of a weak point for Robert Thomas is that he's a really low volume shooter. Just 1.5 shots per game. And the other thing that makes me a little bit nervous about Thomas is the power play. Both Arvidsson and Killorn are on the top unit and Thomas is in the second unit for the Blues.
Yeah, that's right. So are you, like you're thinking you would hold on to Arvidsson and Killorn, or would you try and make something work there for Thomas?
I would not do it for Arvidsson. I would probably do it for Killorn, but I mean, I'm not super motivated here.
That's fair. Yeah, I'm just going to take another look at Killorn here. Like,
I think his shot volume's got a little bit of lucky stuff going on. His shooting percentage is almost 16% this year.
Yeah.
And his secondary assist rate is about twice what his career average is.
Yeah, that's right. And again, shot volume's not great. 1.7 shots on goal per game so far this season. Yeah, Killorn's one of those guys, to me, he's always been sort of waiver wire fodder. Like, I mean, depending on the league you're playing in, but, you know, if it's a deep league, obviously you're not going to want to drop him, but he's just kind of streaky. And as you said, there's some lucky stuff going on right now. And I mean, yeah, we'll just see how that shakes out, but I'd probably roll with Thomas and Arvidsson, like I said. This one's just kind of a fun general question here. What has been the biggest fantasy surprise for you this season and the biggest disappointment? John, I'll start with you.
Ooh. I'm really impressed with Jack Hughes. Just sure, he missed a heck of a lot of time with his injuries there. But he's coming back. He's putting up numbers. And as the season goes on, I think he's just going to get better. So I'm really impressed with the way he's, because last year and the year before, was it the year before or was it just last year? He wasn't great. And him and his year as well, they've fed off each other here lately, and it just seems like good things happen there in Jersey.
Yeah, they're starting to. Yeah, Hughes was good at the end of last season, I think, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He was getting better. I will say his shooting percentage is high. That's concerning, 19.5%. But I would agree. He's been a lot of fun to watch this year. 16 points in 16 games. Okay, and then biggest disappointment for you, John?
Biggest disappointment, Spencer Knight.
Oh, that's a good one.
Oh, nice. That is a good one.
I was banking high on him, and yeah, no.
Didn't work out.
Crushed my dreams.
Yeah, you weren't alone there. You know, Bobrovsky had put together multiple bad seasons in a row. And Knight, you know, took the job from him in the playoffs last year. And so I don't think you were crazy to do what you did. I mean, I know we recommended Knight to people in our draft kit, and it didn't work out, unfortunately.
Yeah, he's definitely been let down this year. It's too bad. Okay. No, that's a good one, John. I actually totally forgot about Spencer Knight.
Makes two of us.
Bruce, I'll go to you next. What's your biggest surprise and your biggest disappointment so far this season?
Well, I know yours, so I won't take yours away from you. I'll let you explain yours. So I did a little bit of research.
I was not saying that one.
And so mine happens to be the, he's currently fifth in league scoring this right now for the NHL. That's Nazem Kadri.
Ooh.
Nice.
So he's fifth in league scoring, and even though Colorado is mostly healthy, he's still putting up points.
Yeah.
He's got 5 assists, I think, in his last 3 games.
Yeah, he's been very good for Colorado this year.
Very good.
It's funny. I was ripping Kadri earlier in the summer, just saying like I wasn't going to touch that guy this year because I'm so tired of him being so inconsistent.
Yes, and you were.
Of course, I was that guy, right? But now he's come in and he's on another level for Colorado. It's great to see. Like
Well, if you also check too, I'm just going to double check. I believe this is a contract year for him as well, so that could be some motivation as well. Yes, it is.
Yeah,
he's in the last year of his deal, so
yeah,
put up some good numbers and hopefully get a good deal in return out of it for next season.
Okay, and then your biggest disappointment
might be a cop out, but the Edmonton Oilers goaltending. I was hoping for something a little like, we're not outstanding. We're not going to see Mike Smith from last season, but something a little more.
Yeah.
Normalized, and so far I think they should probably get Home Depot as a sponsor so they can put plywood in the net. Like, man, they just can't keep it out of their net.
No, they can't. They can't. Okay, that's good stuff there, Mike. For yourself.
Okay, so I am Bruce. For my surprise, I also had Kadri as my surprise player. He's on pace for an incredible 130 points, which is definitely not going to last. I mean, there's a few factors going on for him that should alarm people. Specifically, his primary assist rate, which is, I think it's 2. Last time I checked, and this was about 10 days ago, it was 2.5 primary assists per 60 minutes.
Hmm.
The highest number on record in the NHL is 1.7.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
So this is a record-setting year for Kadri, and good for him. I'm glad he's having a great year, and it is a huge surprise to me that he has put up this many points. On the disappointment side of things, and this is personal disappointment because I owned him or own him in at least one of my fantasy leagues, and because I recommended him as a goalie for people in our draft kit, and that's Philip Grubauer. This is a guy who his 3-year and his career stats are incredible. If you look at his numbers, his save percentage is always up around 0.919, 0.920. He has excellent even strength data for several years, and that's across multiple teams. You know, that's for the Capitals and the Avalanche. Different coaches, different teammates. So I assumed that, you know, changing teams wouldn't be a big deal for him, but it hasn't worked out that way, and he has been absolutely terrible. I believe his save percentage is 0.882, which hurts my teeth a little bit to say out loud.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah, for me, probably the biggest surprise, like, for me would be Ovechkin, and that might sound like a bit of a cop-out, but I did not see him producing, and we've talked about it on the show here in the last couple of weeks, Mike, is just how good Ovechkin has been at age 36. I don't think anybody saw it coming. Nice to see. He's on a mission, right? We've talked about it many times. He just wants to break that goal-scoring record, and Washington's been good, and he continues to be good at an old age, older age, I should say.
He's third in league scoring.
Yeah, like, he's right there with, and he's actually briefly was first overall in the league, right? That's shocking.
He's only 3 points behind McDavid and 2 points behind Draisaitl.
Yeah.
That's really crazy. It's
right there.
That's really crazy.
I did draft Ovi this year, but I never expected that sort of production out of him. So I'd love to see it continue. Not sure it will, but kind of an honorable mention to Tarasenko. That'd be the other one for me that was a big surprise. Like, a lot of people were sort of leaving this guy for dead. They weren't sure about the injury concerns in his shoulder and how it would react. Yeah, he maintained that he was 100%, and so far this year he looks it. 33 points, 14 goals, and 33 games played. So that would be sort of another pleasant surprise. Biggest disappointment for me has to be the New York Islanders goaltending. And I kind of a caveat, so Sorokin has a 2.46 goals against average and a 925 save percentage. He's also got 3 shutouts. So it doesn't sound terrible on the surface. But his record is 8-7-5, and the Islanders are bad. Like, they're not very good right now at all. And Varlamov, you know, he's been fighting some injuries and stuff. He's only got 2 wins in 9 games played. He's got a 9-10 save percentage. You know, this is a guy that was in consideration for the Vezina, right, in the last year or two. And yeah, so he's not looked good. He had a 929 save percentage last year and a 2.04 goals against average.
Still better than the Oilers goaltending.
Oh, Bruce, we would walk over some dead bodies for that kind of goaltending right now. But yeah, so for me, I mean, I've had both those goaltenders last season, and so I've got Sorokin this year. And anyway, so that for me would be my disappointment this year. No arguments there. So let's move on, guys, to Edgework, the segment where we work to give you the edge in your fantasy hockey leagues. We're going to start here with the schedule for week 13. There are 4 light days in week 13 with a combined 6 games played on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and Sunday. Thursday and Saturday should be absolutely packed. They've got 12 games on both nights. That's assuming there's no COVID postponements. A fairly even schedule across the board in terms of games played. No team plays 4 games, and all but 8 teams play 3. Buffalo is a lone team with 1 game with a matchup against San Jose. So Monday, we've got 1 game, 8 on Tuesday, 2 Wednesday, 12 on Thursday, 2 on Friday, 12 Saturday, 1 Sunday. And then we'll get into it here. Teams with 3 games, like I said, it's a large number, and we're going to focus on 3 teams here that play 3 games for next week, starting off with the Nashville Predators. If you take a look at the Left Wing Lock schedule tool, they've got a strength of schedule of minus 16. As we've said in the past, the lower the number, the easier the schedule, the higher the number, the harder the schedule. They've got the 6th best goal differential at plus 11 in the NHL during December, and they had the 5th best winning percentage at .773. 8-2-1 in their last 11 games played, and finally healthy, the Predators are a dangerous team right now. They've got a favorable schedule next week with a matchup matchups against Vegas, LA, and Arizona. They lost 5-2 to Vegas on November 24th, but beat the Kings 2-1 on October 19th and won 4-1 against Arizona on November 13th. So some players to consider there from Nashville is Tanner Janot, 33% owned, Ryan Johansson, 37%, Eli Tolvanen at 24%, Michael Granlund at 56%, and Alex Carrier at 2%. And I think Jeannot had some points here in the season series and some of these matches that we mentioned. So those are some players to keep an eye on there. Guys, any other thoughts on the Predators right now?
Just some great special teams. They're top 10 rank in both power play and penalty kill.
Okay. That's good to know. Yeah, for sure. And Johansson, Tolvanen, and Granlund are all getting time on the power play, whether it's first or second unit, right? So take a look at those guys. The Pittsburgh Penguins, who we'd mentioned earlier in the show, obviously they've been very good as of late. They had the best winning percentage in the NHL during the month of December. 7-1 record, a plus 13 goal differential, which was fourth. They've got a fairly neutral schedule in terms of matchups for next week, facing off against the Blues, Flyers, and the Stars. They beat the Flyers 3-2 in overtime on November 4th. Sorry, Mike. Jeff Carter scored. Sorry, to you, John, because I know how much you love Jeff Carter. and Danton Heinen had an assist. They lost to Dallas in a shootout on October 19th, but John Marino did score in that game and is readily available in virtually all leagues. Some players to consider: Jeff Carter at 41%, Danton. Yeah, sorry, I knew it was coming. Jeff Carter at 41%, Danton Heinen at 4%, Kasperi Kapanen at 19%. Evan Rodriguez somehow is still just 55% owned. I don't understand that one. Yeah, so there's a little bit of tidbit of knowledge I'll drop on you today. Brian Rust, 64% owned, and then John Marino at 3%. I like the Penguins right now. Take a look for next week.
Pick that guy up.
The Vegas Golden Knights here, their strength of schedule is plus 4. So fairly neutral again. The Vegas Golden Knights were the 6th best team in the NHL during December in terms of win percentage at 769, but they were first in terms of wins. They had a 10-3-0 record. As we talked about earlier, they lost Pacioretty, they lost Stone. But based on their schedule, they play Nashville, New York, and Chicago. And they've led the league in goals during December with 57, 40 of which were even strength. And actually, when I looked at it during the month of December, it wasn't even close. Like, Vegas was at least 10 or 12 goals ahead of the next team behind them.
Wow.
That's wild.
Like, it was wild. I couldn't believe it. And 40 goals at even strength, like, again, it was quite a bit, it was substantially more than the team in second. So, regardless of matchup right now, take a look at the Golden Knights. For DFS, take a long look at Marchessault, Carlson, and Smith. I meant to add in the dollar figures for those guys for DraftKings, but that'd be a nice stack. They're going to get a lot of power play time, given that Stone and Pacioretty are out of the lineup right now. And they had a 57 Corsi 4 percentage and 7 goals scored over the last 10 games played. Some players to consider that are readily available: Evgeny Dadonov, 16%. Chandler Stephenson, who's 80% owned, so probably not likely to have that guy available to you, but Nolan Patrick at 2%, Riley Smith at 63%, Nicholas Roy or Waugh 11%, Zach Whitecloud 10% owned, and then Laurent Brossoit at 20%. Any other comments there, guys, on the Vegas Golden Knights?
Just the improvement that Chandler Stephenson has had over the last couple of years.
Yeah, that would be an interesting one, Mike, I think, for fact or fiction. I mean, just off the top of my head, I would say it's got to be fiction, but he's had a great year. It's very interesting to see.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go on to teams with two games. Carolina, Edmonton, LA, Minnesota, Ottawa, Toronto, Winnipeg, and Washington. First up, we're going to talk about the Washington Capitals. Their schedule, actually, it's a plus 19, so it doesn't look all that friendly, but, and I guess it isn't. They've got matchups with St. Louis and Minnesota. However, the Capitals are 6-2-2 in their last 10 games, and during the month of December, they were 9th in goals for, 5th in shot differential, plus 6.9 per game, and they had a 700 win percentage. So keep an eye on them. They've got a couple guys there that could be useful for next week. Lars Eller at 10% owned, Connor Sheary at 10%, Connor McMichael at 1%, Dmitry Orlov at 63%, and Vitek Vanecek at 50%. It seems to be that Samsonov's pretty much got the starting gig there now. He's been starting a lot of games for them, but I think Vanecek's worth a spot start when he's available.
Oh, definitely. The way they're playing right now, yes.
Yeah, for sure. Next up, we got the Winnipeg Jets. They've got a favorable schedule here at minus 20. Among teams with just two games on the schedule, it is one of the most favorable schedules. They've got games against Arizona and then Colorado. During December, the Jets had the 7th-ranked power play, a +4 goal differential, and a .563 win percentage. Some players to consider there, Paul Stastny at 8%, Josh Morrissey at 49%, Nate Schmidt at 33%, and Cole Perfetti at 2%. Thoughts on the Jets? Anything there? Bueller? Okay, we'll move on. teams with one game, Buffalo, Seattle, and Vancouver. Obviously right now, the pick here has to be Vancouver. They've just been on an absolute tear, as we mentioned. Their strength of schedule, too, is -41. They've been virtually unstoppable with Bruce Boudreau, and they've got a matchup here against the Ottawa Senators. So something to look at there. During the month of December, they're 5th in the league in terms of wins with 8, with an 8-1-1 record. Not 0-8-1, that's 8-1-1, just so you guys are clear. and they also posted a +14 goal differential. In the first match of the season series, the Canucks gave the Senators a beatdown. It was a 6-2 win on December 1st. Alex Chiasson, Tyler Motte, and Tanner Pearson all scored in the first game of the season. Tanner Pearson, 6% owned. Nils Höglander, 10%. Vasily Podkolzin, 4%. And Tyler Motte is actually just 0% right now. So, but those are all guys that you can take a look at. They should help you for your matchups for next week. And then I just wanted to mention quickly as well, there are teams that do not play at all. That includes the Montreal Canadiens and the New York Islanders. Any other comments, guys, on the schedule?
All clear.
All clear. Okay. We'll move on then. Let's go to NHL Week 13 waiver wire targets. And some of these guys were... we like some of these players, but just given the schedule, they're not going to make sense for next week. And one of those guys is Tage Thompson. He's just 26% roster, but they only play one game next week, and that's against San Jose. They've decided to put Jeff Skinner and Alex Tuch on that top line along with Tage Thompson, and they've done fairly well together in a limited sample size. Tage Thompson, I believe, is on power play one. I've got power play two here, but no, that's power play one. He's on pace for 55 points, which would be a career high. And given his placement on the top line and the top power play, he's worth a look. If you can stash him, I think for season long, he's probably a guy to look at, especially in deeper leagues.
Yeah, he's having a nice season. And I know a lot of people had kind of mocked him or written him off after that. He just hasn't been good for a couple of years, right? And of course, yeah. he's intimately linked to, what is it, the Ryan O'Reilly trade, right?
Right, yes, yeah.
And so he already has a mark on his back, but he's having a nice season. It's nice to watch him grow.
That trade definitely looks a little better now, right?
Yeah, yeah.
He's putting up some points. It did look pretty lopsided. It probably still is, but good to see him have some success and that team finally starting to put some pieces together. The other guy here that I want to talk about was James Van Riemsdyk. And Bruce, I know you've had this guy in your roster many different times, myself included. Mike, you would have a real close perspective on this guy, given that you watch the team fairly regularly. He's very streaky, and actually, so when I first put him on the list here, I think he was 6 points in 5 games or something. He's gone his last two with no points, and that's kind of what you're going to get from Van Riemsdyk. He's going to be great for about 3 or 4 games, then he might disappear for 3 or 4. But part of the motivation for having him on the list as well is that with Couturier out, they had him playing with Giroux and Atkinson, and he was given time on the top power play. So, you know, this is a guy that's proven in the past he can score goals, and now he's been given some prime placement, right? So someone that I'd take a look at, he had 7 points, 5 goals in his last 10 games played. That was prior to the last two. So, and then I guess we looked at some of the underlying numbers, and Mike, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I don't think there was any concerns about his metrics. Like, it actually looked like we should see some regression positively.
Yeah, I think his secondary assist rate looks pretty low right now. But otherwise, he looks fine. Like, there's nothing worrisome. I think just from a kind of a broad picture, I have some concerns because with Couturier out, if Van Riemsdyk is not on that top line with Giroux, then he's playing with Kevin Hayes, right? And Kevin Hayes this season has been terrible for him.
I saw that graphic that you shared.
Yeah, Yeah, I put that up earlier this morning. Shirt. And
yeah,
he is the worst puck possession player on the Philadelphia Flyers this year. Now, I'll preface that by saying that he's had two surgeries in the last, I think, 9 months for the same issue.
And dealing with some personal tragedies, obviously, too. Sure. Right? Gonna mess with the guy a bit. So, yeah, hopefully he can get to where we expect to see Kevin Hayes. But, for Van Riem's sake.
Yeah, Hayes just has one of those injuries that I think you just don't see these guys recover until the following season.
Yeah.
Like, they come back from surgery, they have a downtown year, and then they're more or less back to normal.
Yeah, so for Van Riemsdyk, then, it's maybe more of a short-term ad, something just knowing as soon as Couturier is back, like, his value's going to immediately drop.
Yeah, and just be very careful just watching where JVR is placed in the lineup each night.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Next guy up here, we've got Anthony Duclair. He's still just 52% rostered, despite being nearly a point per game played, or point per game player, as we mentioned. 22 points, 12 goals in 24 games. That's good enough for a 75-point pace. His 24% shooting percentage is a concern, obviously. His three-year average is 13.3%. But he has been playing alongside Jonathan Huberdeau and Sam Bennett and getting time on power play one. He's got 10 points, 4 goals in his last 10 games played. So, and they do have 3 games for next week as well. So, I mean, he's a good player, playing with at least one elite line mate on an elite offensive team, and there's some volume there for next week. So, guys, any concerns on Duclair, at least on a short-term ad?
No.
Okay. John, you might not like this one, but Corey Perry.
I did not like that one. I could not believe you put that in there. I'm not even going to comment on the guy.
I'm not even
about his eyeballs or anything,
or his hair, or
his
like,
hair.
Oh, nothing.
Nope,
eh?
Just don't like him.
He's got left wing, right wing eligibility. I'm not a Corey Perry fan. Just full disclosure there, but he's been good lately. Like, he has 10 points, 5 goals in his last 10 games played. He's shooting more this season. He's at 2.2 shots on goal per game. He's on pace for 90 penalty minutes. He hits about once per game. He's a nice streaming option anyway. I'm not saying the guy's going to, you know, lead you to a fantasy championship, but I think Corey Perry as a streamer offers some value. They've got 3 games for next week, and, you know, it's not, they've got some tough matchups, like Calgary and Boston aren't going to be cakewalks, but Corey Perry kind of likes those games too, where he can mix it up with guys like, well, whoever from Calgary or Matthew somebody in Boston, Kachuk. Right? Yeah, so I don't know. I kind of liked him as a short-term streamer option for next week. The other guy was Ross Colton. He's 11% owned. 8 points, 2 goals, 12 PIMs, 18 shots on goal, and 29 hits in his last 10 games played. And he was playing with Point and Killorn. I think when Chernak came back, he got bumped. But someone to look at there as well, just producing on an elite team. Phil Kessel, how do you guys feel about Phil?
Phil the Thrill.
Any hate there, John?
not huge, but I don't know. The Hot Dog King, he's been doing all right.
John, you might, yeah, you got a new trademark. Let's get some t-shirts made.
I was going to say, he needs t-shirts for hot dogs.
We'll get the Bison King t-shirts, we'll get the Hot Dog King t-shirts. Kessel is 12% rostered. He's got 3 games for next week, Winnipeg, Chicago, and Nashville. That line with Kraus and Larson has been producing for them. It's actually, they were, at the time of writing, they were tied for the most goals, 4, amongst lines in the NHL. 79.2 Corsi 4 percentage and a 66.7 goals 4 percentage. Kessel himself has been hot of late with 11 points, 2 goals over his last 10. Shot volume of the last 3 seasons has been consistent at just over 2 shots a game. His individual shooting percentage is down at 7.6%. And then, of course, Lawson Kraus is another guy you can take a look at, just 7% owned. I think he had a multi-point game here recently, too. So, I never want to recommend too many Arizona players, but Phil Kessel, I think, based on what he's doing. And the other thing, too, about Phil Kessel, there's a good chance he gets moved to the deadline. Like they kind of want to move out a bunch of players in Arizona. So if they can move him to a contender, he's a guy that can put up some offense for you. Might have some more value. Kyler Yamamoto. I wasn't sure I'd ever see this guy in the waiver wire, seeing as he forgot how to shoot the puck. But here we are. 5% rostered. They've got two games for next week at the Rangers and Toronto, so some tough matchups there. But he's playing with Drysdale and Nugent Hopkins. He hasn't really produced much. Like since a couple years ago when he put up 26 points in 27 games, he's been pretty quiet. However, he's got 5 points, 2 goals over his past 3 games, playing in the top six with those two guys I mentioned. And he does contribute with hits as well. He's on pace for 90-plus hits on the season. So more of a deep league play, I think. But if, I mean, Bruce, I think you've got him in one league, don't you?
Yamamoto?
Yeah.
No, I don't.
No? Okay.
Wrong. No.
I'm mistaken. I mean,
yes, the team is bad, but it's not that bad. I don't have to dig that deep to find players yet.
Yikes. Okay, fair enough. So there it is. That's the sort of a deep league ad. If he continues producing some offense anyway. And then the last forward I've got here is Tanner Pearson. Same thing, 5% roster. They've only got one game on the schedule for next week. But he was actually, was this last night? He had a Gordie Howe hat trick last night. He was playing on the line with Elias Pettersson and Connor Garland. And he's been getting time on power play too. And I found it interesting. I looked at that line. They played well. They had one goal, a 60 Corsi 4 percentage, a 74 expected goals for. They generated 5 scoring chances, one of which was a high danger scoring chance, and they had 0 scoring chances against. He's shooting more this year, 9.5 shots on goal per 60 compared to last season, which was 7.6. His shooting percentage is 6.8%, and it's down compared to his 3-year average of 10.2. And then his IPP is low as well at 48.4%. So some things to like, I think, about Tanner Pearson. Mike, correct me if you see any red flags there, but I...
Yeah, no, I think you're right. He's got a little bit of a nice upside there with that low shooting percentage and the good shot volume. I think it's always a good combination when you're looking for somebody to pick up in the short term.
Yeah. I just like those line mates. And if he's not playing with Pettersson and Garland, he's actually been given time with JT Miller as well. And JT Miller's been very good this year.
Yeah.
Leads the NHL in shifts per game.
Not saying it.
See, if I rip myself about shifts, guys, you can't do it. So that's kind
of
how this works.
Taking the flood out of it. But it's still going to happen.
Okay, let's move on to defenseman here. I've got Matt Roy in here. I don't know why.
That sounds like my answer.
Short-term streamer play. Yeah, anyway. Defenseman? 6 points in his last 10 games played, along with 29 shots on goal, 23 hits, 19 blocks. So he's covering some categories, and he's putting up a few points. They do have 2 matchups for next week, one against Nashville and the other against the lowly minus 22 goal differential Detroit Red Wings. So
they're going
there. You go. That's your reason.
Yeah, there's an option. Yeah, exactly. Next up is Adam Boqvist, 9% rostered. He's got 3 games on the schedule for next week, 1 against Tampa and 2 against New Jersey. He's playing on the second pairing with Gavrikov and on power play 2. He missed 7 games at the end of October, but he's still on pace for 45 points. He's set a career high in goals at 7 in just 20 games played. And over his last 11 games played, he's actually posted 10 points, 6 goals, and he's seeing more time on the power play at 54% power play share. So some good things there to like about Boqvist. We saw some of that offensive instincts in Chicago last year. And John, you might know, I think he played for the London Knights in junior, and he was always I think he played along
sounds
with...
Sounds right.
Yeah, he was always kind of a power play guy there too. So I think the potential's there, especially in deeper leagues. Any other thoughts on Boqvist? Okay, it's an all clear. Let's move on to Noah Hanifin. 7% rostered, 3 games played for next week. They have a shitty schedule. They play Florida, Tampa, and Carolina.
Oh, wow. That's a rough road trip.
Yeah, that's not good. So, I mean, I've still got him here because he's playing on the top pair with Rasmus Anderson, and he's getting time on power play too. He's also got 9 points, 3 goals in his last 12 games played. So and he did score earlier in the season against Carolina in overtime. So if you're looking for even just a short-term ad, you've got some volume there. You've got some offense. And just good placement in the lineup. So I'd give him a look. Again, we got Zach Whitecloud here. We mentioned him earlier in the show. We've talked about how good Vegas has been. He's playing on the second pairing with Shea Theodore. So he's got an elite offensive, defenseman on a pair with him. He's got 5 points, 2 goals in his last 10 games played, and he's contributing in hits and blocks categories. Kind of just a streamer in deep leagues, but someone to give some consideration to for next week, again, playing 3 games. And then kind of the last defenseman here is Mark Giordano. He actually just posted a 3-point game against his former team, the Calgary Flames. He's kind of had a down year by his standards for sure. But he's being given prime deployment. He's on the top pairing and he's been given time on the power play as well. He's got a 57.5% power play share to date. Just one game on the schedule for next week, but it is against Ottawa. So even maybe just for a spot start for one game, he might be someone you need to take a look at. And then last but not least is Noah Dobson. I think I mentioned, just before we jumped on that he was a guy I really wanted to recommend for next week, but obviously they don't play. But I still think it's important. This could be a guy that could really help out your fantasy roster for the remainder of the season, I think. He's just 19% owned. But he's been impressive of late. Since December 4th, he has 9 points, 4 goals, 26 shots on goal, 73% power play share, and 22.5 minutes per game. He's looked good since he's taken over power play one for the Islanders.
Yep.
And yeah, so I picked him up in one or two leagues, just hoping that he kind of sticks in that spot and continues producing for the remainder of the season.
No complaints.
And then let's move on to goaltenders. What's that, John?
No complaints.
No complaints. Okay, good. Well, we can complain about this one because we've got Antti Raanta in here as our first goaltender.
Trash.
I don't know why he's in here. So they've got 2 games next week. They're back-to-backs, and that's kind of why he's in here is maybe he gets a start against Calgary or Florida. He's 25% rostered. We're all aware of his injury troubles, his injury history, but when he is healthy, he's been pretty good. He's got a 5-2-1 record, a 2.08 goals against, 919 save percentage, and 1 shutout, which was just here recently.
The Oilers should trade for him.
The Oilers should trade for anybody. For anybody. I think if you're in a league that covers, it includes goals against average or save percentage or whatever the case, he could help in the peripheral categories. Playing for an elite team like Carolina, he could get you some wins too if that's included in your league. So, I mean, despite the whoops he had against Columbus here that Bruce was very disappointed about, and I grabbed him in 2 leagues too. But, he can perform. And so he's someone I'd take a look at even just for a spot start. Let's talk about Laurent Brossoit, 20% rostered. They've got 3 games on the schedule for next week. He was solid in Winnipeg last season. He had a 2.42 goals against average and 9.18 save percentage. He cashed in over the summer, signed a 2-year contract, and his peripherals haven't been great this year, but he does have a 7-3-0 record, or is it 7-3-1 now? They lost in overtime, I think, right, to the Jets.
Yeah.
But he's been playing the bulk of the starts for Vegas, and I try and take advantage of that while I can. Even if his peripherals aren't great, if you can suffer through some bad save percentages or goals against, maybe if the win category is more important for you, like some leagues, Bruce, right, and John, our ESPN league, it's points head-to-head, and so, 5 points for a win, you want a guy like Brossoit on your lineup, or in your lineup, right?
Definitely.
Okay. And then the last one here is Kaapo Kähkönen. So like we said earlier, if Cam Talbot is out for any length of time, Kaapo Kähkönen is going to make a lot of sense for your roster. And I think that's it, guys. So any other thoughts on waiver wire picks? Someone that I may have missed that we should be talking about for next week?
Not that I can think of.
I don't think so.
Okay.
Nope, me either.
All right, well, we're running a bit long as it is, so we will wrap it up. We'll call that a show. Mike, thanks again for joining us for a couple weeks in a row and for doing your new segment. I think the listeners are really going to enjoy it.
Yeah, thanks again for having me on, guys.
Absolutely. Bruce, John, it was fun as always. We will get back at it again next week. Again, guys, I should mention, Ask the Hacks. If you want to submit questions, please do. FantasyHockeyHacks@gmail.com. Mike and Left Wing Lock, they've offered to do a draw each week, and the winner is going to receive a free subscription to the Left Wing Lock app. So make sure you get your questions in. You can also submit them through Twitter at FHHacks, on Facebook, and on Instagram at Fantasy Hockey Hacks. And look forward to talking to everybody again next week. So thanks, guys. Take care.
Thanks, everyone.